Okay, wow. Thank you. Well, there was so much in there. So I'll start maybe with some kind of, I guess, simpler questions. I mean, obviously, considering your age, you didn't see these films in the cinema at this time. So maybe just start with how you came to know this cinema on a personal level, and how other people of your generation, how much they know about the cinema.
My older brother, he's 5 years older than I, and the first time he brought a tape, a VHS tape of one of Film Farsi's, it was a dance number, Jamila, a famous dancer, and she was half naked, and it was so strange, so different from everything I had seen, that we had to run to the courtyard, the backyard, and just stay there for a while, digest the images, and go back and see the rest. So that was the first encounter, and my brother got me into it. And but basically, they were available on bootleg VHS tapes, which was pretty much like any other national cinema in exile, like Turkish cinema. I mean, you can find plenty of old Turkish films that you cannot find in Turkey. You can find them in Germany. Because when these people moved to a new country, namely Germany, these small shops started to appear who were serving the Turkish community in Germany. The same happened with the Iranians, mostly in California. So these films were telecined mostly in California. I don't know from which sources, probably from tapes, because the qualities, as you can see, are awful.
But as a child, you were in Iran, so and you and your brother were watching them, so they were also available. And
they were illegal. So at some point in the late 80s, early 90s, even having a VCR was banned. So it was really a serious thing to do. I mean, carrying them around, because the whole concept of it was swapping the film, because you couldn't go to a shop. So you had three films, you could swap that film with three other films that someone else had. So it was... It became like an underground culture. Not only the films, but the way the people who liked the films and the way that you could see these films became part of the film Farsi culture after the revolution. But, well, of course, the reason I made the film was exactly like this time travel. Because if I had lived in the 50s and 60s and 70s, probably they were not that fascinating for me. I'm not interested in making a film about Iranian mainstream cinema today. Because I have seen it, I have experienced it, and it bores me. But this was a very valuable time travel. And it's very easy. In this country, you go out in the Russell Square, you want to make a documentary about it. You have loads of footage. You have film footage, you have photograph, and they are systematically archived, and you can access them. But working on Iran, trying to make a film about Iran, you don't have that privilege. So you have to find and dig your own stuff. And that's why Iranian commercial cinema became very valuable for me. I started this, I wanted to do a film about the architecture, the modern architecture in the 50s and 60s, but because there was no photographs whatsoever, I decided to go and look for it in Film Farsi. But then when I started doing the Film Farsi thing for the architecture, I realized there's lots of potential in it. They have so many fascinating things in them. And then it was a flashback for me, and I remembered my childhood. So the film, I have remembered this film. I haven't made it. It's a form of remembrance, even if it's a fake remembrance, because I haven't lived at that time. But it's based on my experience of how I encountered these films for the first time. That's why it's not a history. That's why, I mean, as I said, I had two other screenings. People were saying, why that film is not in your film? I said, this is not a history of Iranian cinema or Film Farsi. I haven't seen that film, and I just don't care about it. These are the stuff that I have seen, and I have found fascinating, interesting for different reasons.
And so you started getting them together for the architecture film. So how then did this whole process work and to come to where we are now? Obviously, it's a massive sort of writing and editing and watching process of what to include, what not to include, and how to tell what I think might be two different stories that are obviously connected in this film.
Well, I decided to turn it into a different film, not the architecture one, I said, well, this subject deserves further exploration. And then I needed an editor, and it was very important. And because I knew that the images were very problematic, there were lots of nudity and this troubling male gaze and everything, I said, okay, I have to work with a female editor. And I had to work with an Iranian because the films are not subtitled, so someone who could speak Farsi. And my deal with my editor, who's not here, by the way, because she's about to give birth to a boy, so this was her first bad boy and a proper boy next week. That's why she couldn't make it. She lives in Bristol. So the deal was, I said, Niaz, that's her name. Niaz, any time you feel that I'm including a clip because I'm enjoying it, cut it out. That was the deal. So that was the deal we had, and I was constantly asking, is it okay? Isn't it here because, you know, I'm enjoying looking at a naked body? And usually she would have said, no, it's absolutely fine. So, and then the process of editing was, I had written everything because she didn't watch the films. I did. I was watching the films. I knew which clip from which film. I watched nearly 200 films within a period of 12 months. And so what happened during the editing was a kind of a dialectic going on, we challenging each other. So again, the second rule was, if I cannot convince you, you can cut it out as well. So for instance, when I was saying that the coup was like rape, so she was saying, why is that? And I was trying to explain to her. If she was convinced, fine. If not, okay, let's work on it a bit more, or if it's not satisfactory, let's cut it out. So that was the process of, and then we finish with a film like this. When you have hundreds and hundreds of images, you usually need a second editor. And after the pregnancy thing, my second editor, who's here sitting at the back, Abul Faz, he helped me with doing some more editing. We added the prologue, which wasn't there. The prologue, the footage from the trials of Cinema Rex in Abadan. It was 20 hours, so we sat there watching some stuff, not all of them, but most of them, which is the subject of another film. I mean, I'm really tempted to go and make an Emil D'Antonio film, like Point of Order, just about that horrible mock trial procession known as the Cinema Rex one. So that was new. We changed some bits, and that's how we ended up here showing the film.
On the subject of gender, I was quite interested in who was going to the cinema.
Everybody.
It was equal gender.
Interesting, in the trials of Cinema Rex, it's very moving, in fact. The woman you see at the beginning of the film was the only woman present at the trial as a witness. But the trial was in a place like a cinema, because it was a short trial. Okay, TV cameras were there, and it was full of people, only men. And there was one woman, and that was the woman. And when the woman starts to tell the judge, who is now, the judge is a mullah, and it's a different time, the way she talks is very moving, because she calls Behruz Vusuri, the actor of The Deer, the film which was being shown at Cinema Rex, by his first name in front of the judge. Normally would say, you know, that, you know, goddamn Shah, or, you know, those are stupid, they cut in actors or whatever. So she keeps calling the actor Behruz. Then Behruz went out in that scene, and then the fire started. So women were there, and that woman was not alone. She went there with her sister. We hear about that we were jumping over the seats to save our lives. The whole family was there in that cinema. So everybody, especially, well, men and women, I would assume that the films were definitely made for men, but women were also part of the experience.
Yeah, I guess what prompted me to ask that was this story about your grandmother,
yeah,
and whether she was typical or not of her generation or of her gender.
That generation,
her generation.
Yeah, early 20th century people, I mean, they were different. She was very religious, and she didn't go to a cinema. But I think the generation after my grandmother, if they were not religious, probably they were okay going and seeing some films. Yeah.
I'm also interested in a conversation we've had before. You spoke to me about your watching films with your sisters as a child.
Yeah.
And sort of, I suppose, where you've developed what now as an adult has become this, you know, a cinephilia, and, you know, a more self-conscious one for sure. But also about, if memory serves me correctly, also about watching films without subtitles and not knowing the language and so on.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, it's interesting, the aura and the memory that you speak of that you bring to this film, maybe going back to those earlier encounters with cinema that you had and what that meant to you and how that's changed or still with you now.
Well, we used to lie down on the floor on a big kind of pillow, three heads on a pillow, in kind of three directions, like three mummies, three corpses, whatever, in front of the TV, watching films. And what made me to make this film was, in fact, we were huge Elvis fans, and we had a tape, a VHS tape, of a compilation film of the musical numbers of old Elvis films in which Elvis had appeared, and we absolutely loved it. That was my first encounter with the concept of a film could be a selection of other things. And later on, when we saw the actual films, most of them are terrible, of course. But the best of the best was in that two-hour-long tape, which was compiled by Andrew Salt. I found out about his name much later. But that was the idea of, okay, so maybe we can do this. And I started doing something similar by putting together better scenes of things for my sisters with two...
Oh, you did this as a child?
Yes, VCRs. Okay. Right. Like, yeah. You know, mostly musicals. We were also huge fans of Metro musicals, but we couldn't understand it. That's the thing. That's why my education in film, like self-education in film, was purely based on the images and visual storytelling. Because we had a book from which we could read a tiny paragraph explaining the story. So, for instance, the story goes like this. A woman gets raped, a lawyer defends her. And that was Anatomy of a Murder. I mean, that line for the whole film, 2 hours and 20 minutes. So, English, nothing, no language except Farsi, of course. And that was the way of, okay, now we know that, you know, someone's been raped, and this is the lawyer, Jimmy Stewart is the lawyer, that's the victim, etc., etc., and just trying to watch the film and enjoying it, because there was no other chance, there was no other possibility. So any image was welcome, any image, as long as it was not the image that they were feeding us on TV.
That's so interesting, because in that kind of viewership, you'd have to bring a lot of your own narrative if you weren't told so much. And I guess in some ways that's kind of what's happening here.
Yeah.
So you're putting your narrative on so many multiple narratives that are there together. And I guess for us as an audience, as much as I can't put that much of my own narrative, obviously as a female spectator I maybe have a different view, but I'm still very influenced by your voice, obviously, in this film. I'm really being told a story by you. And also I think I'm being told two stories. So the first one is more about what film Farsi did as a popular culture and going into sort of a psyche and the psyche of a nation. And the second part of the film, somehow that footage starts to be used by you to make another film. So that footage then becomes a sort of archive that taken out of context to illustrate the story of leading up to the revolution. Do you see it that way, or can you talk about how you wrote the story or stories of this film?
Stories. Well, yeah. I mean, I knew that I'm not going to make a history. I don't believe in histories. I mean, just especially in cinema. Just look at the films made under the title "The History of This or That." They're just mostly terrible films. And I don't believe in history, especially coming from the country that I come from. You stop believing in history, official or unofficial. But there is one history that I really believe in, and that's autobiography. That's why I conceived the film as an autobiography of sorts. My encounter is the starting point and the beginning, the end of the film. And how I understood and how I saw these films, either back in the 90s when we were watching them, or later on, 6-7 months ago when I was rewatching some films. And then, because I wanted to make sure that, okay, this is not a history. I there's lots of me and I in the film. I don't like these things. I don't like mentioning myself. It's not easy for me talking about myself and personal experiences, unlike my editor, who's very open about these things. But we decided to do that because it makes it clear, look, it's not the history, it's my grandmother. I mean, I care more about my grandmother and her TV set, or care as much as about my grandmother than about the Shah. So that was the thing, that it's very personal, and people shouldn't mistake it for a general history. So if you feel that there are more than one film in there, which, well, probably you're right, because one is a film which is about a certain type of cinema, one is a film which is about Iran. From there's a starting point, there's the end point, everything is very clear in the film. And then there is me walking back and forth between 53 to 79 trying to find something.
Yeah, because there's this, I guess your treatment is in the second half of the film, is looking at this as somehow ominous or portentous for what happened in the future, which is now obviously a past.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of dialogue going on. So that's why, I guess, what I'm wondering about in writing the script, how that emerged for you. Was it through with the editor, or you wrote it like separately and brought it to the table?
Separately, definitely separately. And I was writing the image. The only time that was written before looking at any material, which I think is the weakest part of the film, and I should do something about it, is the bit from Tehran. Tehran is a beautiful city, but up to the coup. That was written, and I think it doesn't work that well. But the rest, it was written from the images. I looked at the image and I wrote for that image. And that's why I like the rest of the thing. I don't like that part very much. It's very formal. It sounds like a history. So that's why I think I have to do something about that part. But yeah, mostly written for the images. So looking at a film, okay, this is amazing. But there was a third rule. Never write something for a single scene unless you can find similar scenes, which are like, if you want to argue that, you know, there's a picture of Imam Ali on the walls of Film Farsi, we found hundreds, and we want to do an installation with that, actually, because they're amazing. And, or a tiny other thing, mirrors. The film is based around certain objects. There's an image of Imam Ali, there's a mirror, from the beginning to the end of the film, either in the songs, in the clips. I try to use these things, these elements, as points which are kind of connecting the story, because I didn't want to have like a very loose story. I love the films with a beginning and an end. And I use these objects and these ideas, which are in Film Farsi, as the connecting kind of the links between different parts of the film.
I'm also interested in the people who made them, because, I mean, you talk about it as a popular cinema and a cinema of the working class.
Right.
So that gives us some, and we've talked a little bit about the audience.
Yeah.
But I know you mentioned to me when you were making this as well, that the ethnicity of the directors is also, and the writers and directors is also interesting compared to now even.
True. Before answering that question, I have to say that, just to tell you that this is not a film which was written and, you know, it's not a film with clear ideas. I still don't know my relationship with Film Farsi. And that's troubling some people, but I just don't care. Do I like it or dislike it? I don't know. I don't know. They are just films. I like moving the images. But back to your question, what was the question?
You can ask the questions.
No. That was a good one.
It was about the ethnicity of the director.
Ethnicity, yeah. Why Iranian cinema is very boring after the revolution, at least for one major reason. Before the revolution, I mean, looking at the cinema of the 50s up to the 70s, you have Iranians working, Jewish Iranians, Armenians, Arabs, Indians, many Russians, I mean, in one, and they're all making Film Farsi. That's so wonderful about it, that they're all making a film, they all look alike, but they are people from different ethnicities, minorities. They have voices, but they are using that voice for the sake of the whole nation, at least the way that they taught back then, you know, the film force is something for everybody. So that is totally missing now, absolutely missing. It doesn't exist anymore, which I regret, because you could find many great examples of someone bringing a certain touch to a film. And I think I told you this before, that, you know, many of film directors of Film Farsi went to other countries. And in fact, the most despised type of cinema in Israel was, which is something like Film Farsi. It was, it became popular in the 70s by Iranian directors, Jewish Iranians, who migrated to Israel. So up to 1972, the biggest box office hit in the history of Israeli cinema was made by an Iranian. And they were very active everywhere. And the films were doing very well. But that doesn't exist. And that's something I'm really missing about the kind of culture. But probably there is that element of these films are very primitive in a nice way. And because you cannot control the film. The film is just being made on the spot. You cannot control it. So things appear in the film, things creep in, which are not part of the film. So in a scene that the one of the Jahils is kind of reading out the paper,
the stammer,
from the white revolution thing, and the stammer. It's just, you have many of those moments in film farces. They're not planned, they just happen. And that's beautiful. And you don't have it in Iranian art house cinema, because in art house cinema, directors like Mehrjoui, Kiarostami, all the great directors from before the revolution, everything is absolutely, totally controlled. Everything in the frame is planned. So you don't have a chance to see something which is very spontaneous, very natural, and very crazy for that reason.
While watching it, I was thinking, what would it be like if somebody made a film essay about what carry-on films in England meant to the national psyche? So I've challenged
somebody
here. You can do
that with all types of popular cinemas. I mean, now people have started to make films, for instance, about Eurotrash. But the difference is, when you talk about Eurotrash, you have access to it. Now there are DVD labels which are specialized in releasing those films on DVD and now on Blu-ray. Okay, but this is a kind of cinema that you cannot have access to. That's the major difference. It's a secret cinema. It's probably the least known type of cinema that I know. I'm sure maybe...
I imagine that was the challenge for you.
Yeah, that was the challenge. That was exactly the challenge that, you know, so maybe if there is another film in that film, is that, okay, there's this kind of cinema and it was introducing it to people.
So for those of you who don't know, Ehsan is also a curator and programmer. I'm going to ask you about a few...
Where do you live and where did you actually do this work?
Here in London.
Here in London, right. Okay. I wasn't clear about that. And when you got your... You showed 58 copies, or you list 58 titles at the end of the thing, I think I... When you were collecting... The VHS tapes. Where did you collect them from?
Well, now I think you can watch them on YouTube. Somebody's uploading them. And I have Johnny Bravo is his name, and I've been in touch with him. I don't know what's his real name. I don't care. There's this guy uploading them, and I'm using the footage. Okay. But looking at the images, I realized that I can do great stuff with them. I can turn a story by André Breton into a film using film Farsi. And in fact, I'm making a film about Pasolini and I'm using film Farsi because it's perfect for everything. I see public domain. Nobody's going to, you know, sue me, and I have thousands and thousands of hours of fantastic footage to use.
And as a curator then, that's what I want to ask, because Ehsan has programmed Iranian programs and also films about jazz for things like Cinema Ritrovata in Bologna and so on. I mean, are you interested in curating programs around this, or as well as making films about anything else with it?
I hope so. As you know, it's very, very difficult to find Finn Farsi's own print, actual print. But miraculously... we have found films by Samuel Khachikian, who's a great director, by the way. He's one of the directors that I truly admire. And all the camera negatives are lost. But we are working with Italians on the restoration of four films by Sam Khachikian, and they're going to be playing in Bologna in June. Il Cinema Ritrovato is the name of the festival. Last week of June, it's going to be a chance of a lifetime.
And they're film Farsi films.
Well, they are, you call it anything you like. They are from the, they're commercial films from this period. We had some clips by Sam Khachikian. They're film noirs. It's called Terror Noir, the thrillers of Sam Khachikian. And they're wonderful films. They're beautiful films. And full of innovations in form. So, you know, you and Sam Khachikian is Armenian Iranian. See, so it's very fascinating. I hope so. There are, if I find the films, of course I'm going to work on them. I'm going to screen them. But now this is very exciting because we have the chance. The copies are so bad. For one film, which is called The Strike, Zarbat, no, as I said, no camera negative is left. And we had to put together 17 different projector positives, splice them together for a full version of the film, which we cannot roll into the projector. It's so fragile. So the only thing we can do is to scan the film and make a DCP out of it. But yeah, that's a project that I have. But also probably exhibitions, a room this size with where people could just listen to the soundtrack of Film Farsi. I had a great experience in Copenhagen, the first screening of the film, the first work in progress screening of the film. They were very, being Danes, they love parties, and they had this party right after the film, a Film Farsi party, which there was a DJ playing the soundtrack from Film Farsi, and people were drinking vodka and dancing until 3 in the morning. And they actually hijacked the screen. Nobody gave a damn about me. And I was looking at them, and I thought, wow, I mean, this is, the Film Farsi can really work, because it's their party, it's their film. And now, you know, they watch the film, and now they are drinking their vodka and dancing to the music. So what if we repeat the same thing in a kind of more, slightly more civilized circumstances. Some music that you could listen to. We have these installation things. We have done some videos, more experimental type of videos and short videos. And there are posters and things to show. So, yeah, it is lots of potential in Film Farsi. Yes. It's just, it's not only a film, it's a culture. And it even affected the way me and my editor were talking to each other. I mean, I was really like a talking to my editor, like a tough guy from it, like a giant. And she was the same. It really transformed us, at least for a couple of weeks, into two really strange people coming right out of the Film Farsi universe. So they have lots of potential, really.
Sounds dangerous.
Oh, yeah, slightly. No.
Maybe you shouldn't do that. No.
Let's see.
Anyway, we do give a damn about you tonight.
No. I'm just, this is very important. That's because, look, I was nervous. I was, who's going to watch this shit? And then I was there. I think probably 35%, 40% of the audience were Iranians, expats. And sitting at the back, and when I was making the film, I knew that I was making a film for non-Iranians. I thought, they know Iranians. They know about it. They won't be interested. Let me introduce non-Iranians to the concept of Film Farsi. But Iranians were the people who were moved most. One of the editors here, none of my editors knew about the history of these films. And they are both graduates from Tehran University of Art, aren't you? And they are great filmmakers, but they didn't know about Film Farsi. And again, for Iranians who are not even into cinema, it has the that kind of nostalgic function. People were sawing in the cinema. People were talking to the Iranian way of watching the film, talking back to the screen. It was a very wild screening. So I had this kind of almost Rocky Horror Picture Show kind of experience with the Iranians in Copenhagen. And that was the moment I realized, okay, you know, this is a film for everybody.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, it's a good time to open it up to the audience, everybody. Okay, so you were the first up, then you, and then you.
Can I challenge you more on audience gender? I mean, I was struck by what Teresa said, but also, I mean, when you think about other audiences in Asian cinema between the 30s and the 70s, the big money was in making films for women. Those studio bosses would want to, you know, to make romantic melodramas, they would want to make song and dance films, and yet the what I got from particularly the early part of the films was a very male gaze, as you mentioned, male gaze, I mean the rape scenes, but everything else, it did seem overwhelmingly male gaze. Now, is that film Farsi, or is there a recension in what you've collected, in what got passed in another generation in terms of videos?
Mm. And well, it's definitely in film Farsi. I have no statistics on the gender, the figures on which gender saw the films most. But from what I have heard from my parents, friends of that generation, is that everybody was going to the cinema. Everybody. There were certain types of cinema made for showing films for single male audience. South Tehran, downtown, but there are also cinemas for families. And
did we see those, though?
Pardon?
Did we see those in your selection?
Yeah, I mean, most of these films were seen by everybody. That's the point, everybody. I mean, whether they saw the problematic side of these films is a different story. I don't know about that. But they went to the cinemas. That's the whole point. When I ask, well, were they really rebelling against these films? Because they were in the films, they made it and they saw it. Then what was the revolution about? I'm trying to understand. I don't have an answer for that, but I thought it's important to ask those questions.
So you were next.
First of all, thank you for the film. I enjoyed it as an Iranian. I just loved watching it. I'm sorry to hear that you don't believe in history. I'm a historian. I take on Iranian history.
I said cinema history. I have to correct myself. Actually, what I do as a curator is only about history. But telling the history of Iranian commercial cinema is not my job. Maybe someone else could do that.
But I think whether you realize it or not, you are presenting a narrative of Iranian history, especially for a non-Iranian audience that might not be familiar with it. But for me, and you know, I do this all day, every day, there was a very interesting historical argument in your film, which is that the culture of ordinary people in Iran in the 1970s was not that different to the culture of the Shah himself and the royal court, that actually they were culturally much closer to each other than perhaps any intellectual would care to acknowledge.
Yeah.
It's a very counterintuitive argument if you're trying to understand the revolution.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, it comes out, there's that wonderful scene with Parviz Sayyad, and the Samad scene where he's mocking the intellectual.
Yes.
You know nothing of Vietnam. so even Film Farsi is mocking the high culture of Iran in the 1970s, which was the engagé poet or intellect, and you know, this was the popular.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, were you deliberately conscious of that? I mean, am I putting words in your mouth, or are you?
I don't know how to answer that. But you raised a very good point. But anything I say now would be used against me in this case. But you know, when you work on a film for 2 years, especially a film which is a compilation film, every piece is coming from somewhere. You have to go look for it. You have to put it there. You have to treat it. You have to polish it. So every piece in that film, I'm responsible for it. And nothing is random. But I can only add one thing to your point, and that is we Iranians, as Iranians, we are very proud of our culture, which is a bit annoying, really, because, you know, when we talk about Iranian culture, we always want to talk about, you know, the poets, great poets, but we are not Khayyam and Ferdowsi and Abbas. We are mostly this, and we have to acknowledge it. We are looking at Film Farsi. I was so great because, look, I'm as terrible as this man on the screen. Sometimes I behave the same way. And it's easy to associate yourself with an ideal universe of the greatest poets in human history. No, we're film Farsi, and that explains many things. It sometimes explains more than Iranian art house cinema, especially urban culture, the urban life. We don't see it in Iranian art house cinema. Most of them, the good ones, great ones, they're masterpieces, but they are set in the villages. But you have a totally different type of village again in film Farsi. But at least the glimpse into the urban life and urban culture is more accurate.
Yeah, coming in, I guess, if I can sature a little bit, but in the film you ask at one point, you know, were these, you know, 2 million people were watching these films, and were these the same people who came to the revolution? So you do pose it as a question rather than say it as the history.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's there, but it's still open-ended, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. As I said, Martians did the revolution, or someone else did. I don't know. I'm just asking. If someone knows, please illuminate me.
What's your question? And then we'll take yours.
Hi, thank you so much. That was really generous. Also, your conversation was really helpful. Maybe my question is two-part. One is, I really enjoyed the contextualization of you putting the Iranian film Farsi with the counterpart of the remake of it, an Italian version,
yeah,
or American version. That was incredible. But also, it was a combination of chronologically history and your anecdotes combined, which for me created a curatorial experience, which was combination of these screens playing, and we are in the middle of it, being able to sing partially from each section. She asked you a question about the process of text and the choose of images and the editing of that. So I wonder, maybe during the writing process, there was also editorial going on with you yourself, or how this research has been combined with these images, and how much practically, curatorial aspect of it has affected your choice, if that makes sense.
Oh, good question. I don't know how to answer it. I don't know. I just naturally, you know, things change all the time when you make a film, especially in documentary, especially a film which is being made with an editor.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of changes, of course, but there was not lots of history out there for me to explore and use in my film. It really kind of breaks my heart that you saw scenes from A Party in Hell. I absolutely adore that film. That's one of my favorite films in the history of Iranian cinema. And the co-director of the film, an Iranian-Armenian, none of the so-called official histories of Iranian cinema have written his name correctly. His name is Mushaq Sarvari, and everybody has written it Mushaq Sururi. So, which means the social history of Iranian cinema by Hamid Nafis is 4 volumes, and he doesn't know the gender of the guy who produced Samuel Khachikian's films. He thinks Sanasar Khachaturian is a woman. So there is nothing. Iranica, the encyclopedia, same mistakes. So I had nothing. I just had oral histories. I have lots of friends who are huge fans of film Farsi. And they were clever enough and passionate enough to talk to these filmmakers before they died. So I knew, you know, how the films were made. I used lots of these oral histories, especially Nima Hassani Nasab, whose name is in the credit. He was huge. I mean, one should make a film of our phone conversations, which are not actually phone conversations because they're very expensive calling Iran. They are Viber, Telegram voice messages. Me sending a message, look, I'm looking for a scene when a donkey comes into the shot from the left hand. And this guy is a walking encyclopedia, living encyclopedia of Iranian cinema. Thing, 3 titles immediately. So there are people, 3 or 4 people in Iran who have devoted their whole life to film Farsi, but they are not people whose name is heard on the media. They are not those who publish 4-volume books. They're just ordinary people like film Farsi. That's, you know, what I've learned. I learned lots of stuff from them. I used it in the film.
Mm-hmm. Read a question up here.
I'm wondering that a few things I found problematic, if I may say.
In film Farsi or in my film? Or both? Or in my film?
There were quite a few genres.
Yeah.
So if you're not aware, I've been watching these films, so, and I wonder if putting all of this under the title film Farsi, I mean, Saad has written a book that you may prefer, because he actually looks at the Luti genre. He sort of brackets the different, because film Farsi, whilst the style of film Farsi, because of its popularity, seeped into other genres, I really don't think Khatchoukian would be happy to be under the title of film Farsi or Merjoui. And then there is this thing you said about the art films being in the suburb and in the villages. I mean, some of our best early art house films, like Bezoy's Ragbar, Golestan.
I said mostly. I didn't say every single film.
This is it. That's post-revolution. Post-revolution of Iran, a lot of the art house filmmakers, simply because of all the restrictions, thought, you know what, much easier. They're already in their village garb.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of the dialogues are improvised. So that was... And then, I found this a bit problematic. As an outsider, that I wonder if you're not actually distinguishing between other genres that have elements of film Farsi.
Mm.
So if people walk away and think, that was all film Farsi, I'm not sure that would be correct.
I didn't... I'm sure... you remember that, well, the film is called Film Farsi. The film could be called anything. But I don't use the term Film Farsi for every single film. And, yes. And what I do is, for instance, arriving at Qaisar, I say that how it became something else. But this is a problem which was detected at the second screening of the film, where... the Iranian scholar Jamshid Akrami, he said, well, you had clips of Ali Hatami, of this and that, directors who are not film Farsi. Have you watched the films, really? They are not different from film Farsi at all. And I'm not making this film sticking to the old idea, which was a very simplistic one, that, okay, film Farsi is this, and these names are safe. Ali Hatami is safe. Masoud Kimyai is safe. No, there is no major difference between a film like Baba Shamal with a musical made in the same period. What, and don't take me wrong, by saying a film being a film Farsi, I don't want to reject it. I don't want to dismiss it. As I said, I still don't know my relationship with film Farsi. I really enjoy...
No one said dismiss it, my friend. It's just that I felt that the lines were very blurred. Mm. So I'd hate for people leaving here to imagine that the film... So it's...
For instance, which films? Which films?
Like, for example, you showed... Khatchoukian, I can never say his name. No way in heaven's earth could you call him a film Farsi director. And that film you showed was pre-film Farsi, 1950s. There was no film Farsi. The film was just taking off in Iran, as you're aware. And then something like, what's his name? I mean, I will go and watch this Mehdi, because it's the only one I haven't watched. Diamond 33.
Yes,
he's
terrible film.
So un-film Farsi, that man. Though he brings in...
You see, so you're judging the character. You haven't seen
the
film. But because you love Mehdi, as I do. I mean, Mehdi is so hip. He's so great. But that's a film Farsi, and not a good one. But he made some great films. I'm spending the whole year working on films by Khatchoukian because I believe in it. I don't care about the title. They are good films that deserve to be shown. If it's up to me, you should save every single film you saw here. I mean, I like all of them as filmic material, as things that have to be preserved. But anyway.
So one up here, and then you... Did you put your hand up? Oh, sorry. Oh, I'll take you after you now.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I wanted to really congratulate you. It's an exciting idea, and you've done it really well. I think the kind of question that is arising is not in really labeling whether the films that you're showing are called film Farsi or not, but it is in the difficulty that you've had in really probably getting footage for the audiences that have been watching these films. For example, the audience that is watching Qaisar, I lived in that period, and I went to cinema in that period. That would be entirely different from the audience that, you know, would be like for, I don't know, M. Sanha, in which Fardin is playing the hero.
Mm.
So I think that is not a problem. I'm just trying to really somehow relate to the question that has been asked there. I mean, there is, that is, that if you kind of reshape that question, I think it is the issue of audiences, really, not the issue of the genres.
Mm. Would it be fair to say that they were all popular cinema? Because I guess that, I don't know, as an audience, that's what I'm taking from it.
Very, very popular
that
cinema.
And because the argument is about how it's...
The first cut of the film...
The audience that went to see Gavaldon Hall, would have been entirely different. And also there were films which were actually for a different purpose altogether.
Excuse me, you cannot say entirely different, I think, because it featured a popular star. So there were Behrouz Vusuri fans going to watch another Behrouz Vusuri film, but encountering a totally different film, which is not like his previous film, is not like the film he made after, but that's the power of the star. So there was a star system, and people were going to see a film by a star. Some of them knew about the director, some of them didn't, but you shouldn't underestimate the star factor in this film.
What I'm saying is that, if I may, sorry, at that stage, you know, that particular film, Gavaldon Hall, is kind of borrowing from the overall psyche and overall perception within the Iranian intellectual community.
Yeah,
It is very close to what happened in Siyakar and all of those things, you know, the guerrilla movement and all of that. So it is, I mean, those audiences are inevitably different from the other audiences who go to cinema. For example, some of these films were made specifically for young people to go there and find a place where, you know, they could actually interact with each other somehow.
I won't contradict you. I think, absolutely.
But, I mean, those audiences were usually different, I think.
They are naturally, yeah.
Yourself?
Well, first of all, thanks very much for the great film. I really, really enjoyed watching it. But I'm also somehow quite moved by the dichotomy between the narrative of the film, in which you pose questions, everything is very speculative. You don't try to create a coherent narrative of history, as you mentioned, and it's somehow personal. But in the Q&A, suddenly there's a more confident filmmaker who is somehow narrating the history for us. And then the device...
How did you get that?
Sorry?
How did you get that? Give me an example.
This is just one.
Is that history?
No, this is the example of no, the audiences are not like that, or the audiences are like that. This is the thing that in the film you have very blurred boundary between many different things without trying to define them, which is part of the power of the film. But in the Q&A, that comes across as if the devices used in the film are mostly disclaimers rather than the original narrative that they are creating. So in that sense, I think the issue of the audience, which was raised in the very first question, also comes back, and that's why I think we see a lot of people mentioning that. And I think there is this element that there are very different films in your film being discussed for different reasons. And in the film, there's no reason to really make them into one category. And in that sense, we could say that, yes, there are different audiences, and a lot of them, and I think this is a sociological fact that we can somehow back with evidence, a lot of these films were mostly made for only male audience. And the woman who was at the trial for The Deer or Gavaldon Hall doesn't represent the audience who would see a different film in which the story is not that political, the female hero has a completely different role than the female characters of The Deer, and even the male characters. So I think that's one thing. But my main question here is that the personal motivation behind this narrative, is it an attempt, which comes across in the film, as an attempt to try to somehow resolve some personal relationship with the history or the prehistory for us, for our generation, the prehistory of what we knew as Iranian cinema?
And that prehistory would be very convoluted because it's a lot of different things in it. And this is the main question that you ask as well.
Mm.
Who made the revolution? And if these films were so popular, so maybe we need to really see the convolution at the same time. And instead of like trying to segregate them from each other and say that it was one part against the other part, maybe it was the actual society revolting against itself. So I don't think the question that you ask in the film that maybe it was Martians is a serious question. You obviously think that they were not Martians. So
who knows? I don't know. I know what you mean. The process, I don't know. I don't, as I said, because I didn't have an answer for these questions. That's why they are just questions. I just don't know. I was interested in asking them. And yes, this is a film which is partly made to settle the scores with myself. But I was also interested in the textures, the visual experience of Film Farsi. That was the most important part for me. Just watching these films again on bigger screen, that was very, very important, even from tapes. Because I am a huge fan of a film. I always compare Film Farsi to that film. That's a masterpiece. That's a great film. Just the concept, I'm comparing the There was a not-so-great filmmaker called Jesus Franco. He made 400 films of Eurotrash sexploitation films. He made a film in 1971. It's a vampire film with Christopher Lee. A Catalan filmmaker who was on the set with a camera, a black and white 16mm camera, made a film which is not a behind-the-scenes film. It's a film made on the same set while Jesus Franco is making his Dracula film. And it's all about textures, light, and different kind of capturing the movement, which transforms the original film, which is terrible, almost unwatchable, to something sublime. So it's all in the light, in the textures of that camera, which must have been a very cheap one. And so we can put the films together. The second film, which is directed by Pere Portobello, is called, I don't know how it's pronounced in Catalan, but it's something like Aquatic Vampire. And if you put them together, it's almost the same film, almost the same scene, but something's been added to the film. There's an element of time which is absent in the original film. And time and that kind of texture was everything I was looking for. And I was trying to find in the footage, and that kind of dictated the kind of films I was using, because I really wanted to travel back to that time. And this is, of course, a very personal experience. In reality, probably it would have been totally different. But it is how I fancy myself going back and encountering that world and recreating it here on film.
I see this. You had a question, didn't you? Just before you go on, I just want to check my colleagues about the kind of time we have. How much time do we have for more questions?
About 10 minutes.
Okay, thanks.
I just wanted to tell you, I did the same style of film in the 90s about Lebanon. I went into 400 films, Serie B, as you say, and made an editing, another style. It was not a narrative, telling my own discovery and commenting on the different elements of the time, explaining, but just telling history of the time, history, how people were living the things through the characters, taking a character from one film, another film, joining them. But they are, I had characters coming into the cinema. Here you are the one and leading the story. What I wanted to tell you is that the style of images, you found them exactly the same as après.
Yeah.
In Lebanon, where it was the best cinema was more in Egypt until the 60s, end of 60s. Then 70s, there was a sort of fundamentalist financing films, and the level went down. And there was a sort of naive, they were exploiting the naive aspect, the fact that people did not know the image.
Mm.
So they were receiving, they could do anything and people would all receive it or refuse it. Right. For instance, in Beirut, when I was young, I was refusing to go and see this film, considering they were, you know, bad films. And when I jumped into them in the 90s, after the war, I loved them because I saw that they painted my society.
Yeah.
So what's incredible is that they were underproduct of Egyptian film, because, as you say, the Egyptian and Indian, you talk about it at one moment, marks this film of the region. But I mean, it's a fantastic work that you did, because it's a.
What is your film called?
Once Upon a Time, Beirut.
Once Upon a Time, I would love to see it
and watch it now. And in fact, it's the whole region that was like this, and that's why now it's very interesting. Because if someone wants to make a comparison of what was happening.
Mm.
How the situation politically was exploited, how the naivete of the people was exploited, how they received the films. Mm. And it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. You can write even the whole region story going from these films that are practically the same, from Turkey to Iran to Beirut, where there was the industry of cinema.
Right.
The only question is, who was financing this film in Iran? We know, for instance, in Egypt and Beirut, when the level went down and it was more Serie B film, there was a particular part who was financing these films.
Mm.
So as to distract the people from the serious thing, they didn't know how to receive the modernity.
Mm.
Modernity was coming. It's the 60s, the 70s, it's the period where modernity was coming, and they didn't know how to. It was coming too quickly, in a way.
Yes.
So I don't know.
Pretty much private sector. I mean, they were financing the films, of course. For instance, places like Ministry of Culture, National Radio and Television, they were putting money in art house films and then banning them, most of them. But this was a private sector affair. And there were many strong producers who even managed to import these films to other countries, including Lebanon. There were co-productions and imports, exports from
it
to Lebanon.
And would it be fair to say, in a culture where certain films are being banned, if you're in the private sector making popular cinema in order to make profit, you're going to self-censor to begin with?
I don't know if I can say that. I'm not sure, because there were even film farces which were banned.
Okay.
So, for stupid reasons, but they were banned. So, art house was more problematic, because you know that the filmmaker, he's a guy who's just arrived from UCLA. He looks like a hippie. He smokes hash. He has made a film about a village, a miserable village. And let's look at the material. That was, you know, alarming. But probably film farsi less. But just imagine, there were some film farsis that were so bad that they were banned because of that. That's probably the most. There was a film called Khare Dajjal. I don't know if there's a word in English for Khare Dajjal. It's Dajjal's donkey. And that film was banned because it was just too bad, even by the standards of film farsi. There was a film called Ali Agha Kallepaz. Again, difficult to translate, but it's about some guy who makes a certain type of a stew. That film was also banned. So there were films that were so bad that they were banned.
Technically bad or morally bad?
Technically bad.
Aesthetically,
technically, I mean,
story,
so they couldn't follow the stories. Mm. One of the problems of the censor was, but this film doesn't have a story. People might go to the cinema and they will turn the cinema chairs, because Iranians, when they were unhappy, they were destroying the property. So we were afraid, okay, let's not show this film, they're going to destroy the property. I don't know if, you know, people would, but still you can see them. Some of them are now are out now, and they're incredible films. They're almost surrealistic.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we have any final questions? Yep, we have one above.
Thank you very much. Really enjoyed it as an Iranian that lived just, was old enough just to see all those movies mostly. It was really lovely. It was just really nostalgic, the whole concept. Have you ever thought about what your next project would be? Would you ever consider film, poetry and jazz?
Well, definitely not film, Farsi and jazz, but I'm going to use film Farsi, as I said. I'm making a film about Pier Paolo Pasolini, the Italian director. It's about his trip to Isfahan. So I'm looking at film Farsis, which were shot in Isfahan. And in fact, we have many film Farsis shot in Isfahan, in the south, but very few films, or almost no films, shot in a city like Mashhad, which is our hometown. And that's very interesting. And it also tells a lot about what film Farsi really meant. You said jazz. Well, of course, I'd do anything. I'd do any film. I would use jazz as a soundtrack. So you had the Creeper Clarence Lofton as the last song. But there was, in the first cut of the film, which was a very long cut, it was 3 hours long, I had a section dedicated to this concept of the blues and Iranian mainstream cinema. Memphis Slim says blues. It's about women, whiskey, and trains. Film Farsi is about women, vodka, and trains. Trains as means of escape from Tehran to the south, or going for redemption to Mashhad. And we had this long section of just comparing the form of film Farsi to the blues, how you have a very simple form upon which you can tell different stories of suffering, of happiness, of journeys, of redemption, of loneliness, of being wasted. So that was in the film, in fact. And there was another section which was edited along with a Jelly Roll Morton song, Murder Ballads. But we thought it was too long. There was no point in keeping it. So that bit is now out. But, you know, thanks for reminding me about jazz and the blues.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow we're going to have our last essay film.